You're listening to a podcast from 702 and Cape Talk.
702 and Cape Talk. Family Matters.
Family Matters, we're asking the question, are you raising a brat? Maybe you've called him Aki Anastasio. Is it too late now to reverse the effects in adulthood? That is the conversation we're going to have. And of course, we're using the word brat because it's the easiest way to pick out what we're talking about. But I'm becoming increasingly sensitive, Shame, in my old age. And I think even the word brat and where children like Aki come from in terms of what maketh a brat. Look at this brat coming back here. Funanton. Okay, he's coming to fetch his 1,000 rand gadget, unreassuringly cheap. And of course, it's very important because you might be a single parent, for example, and maybe all sorts of reason why you spoil your child, and it can come from a good place. But I wonder whether it's always necessarily good for the child. Share your stories, your parenting challenges, or maybe you're just a teacher working in the ECD space, for example, or a mentor, all sorts of relationship where you are entrusted with the duty of care towards a child. This conversation is one you've been having in your head. Let's have it on the airwaves. 011-883-0702. That's the number you can call us here in the studio. And of course, in Cape Town on 021-446-0567. Stephanie Dawson Cosses, no stranger to the show. Stephanie, it's lovely seeing you again. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you. It's good to be here. You serious?
I'm going to shut up because you're the expert here. I've thrown out this lovely provocative conversation question. And I suppose the best place to start is not quite conception, or maybe we should go that far back, but certainly early childhood, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. So we, as parents, it's the one thing that we can do in life that we don't need any qualification or training in, apparently, but to take up the role as
what,
parent.
Conceiving or parenting? Well,
so we land at this particular given gifted moment when we are holding our newborn. We're gazing into his or her eyes, and sometimes we're overwhelmed with love, and sometimes we're overwhelmed with this apparent huge responsibility that we are now holding. This little vulnerable person is going to be totally reliant on us, and that can be quite overwhelming. And so when we go into the experience a few days into this parenting role, the broken nights and the seemingly endless demands of a crying baby, a tantruming toddler in months and years to come, we find ourselves parenting with an approach of anything for peace. So that is where the crunch seems to come, because instead of being able to nurture and meet our little one's needs, we perceive it as a trade. We'll do anything for the noise to stop.
A and B, presumably, I'm no parent, also just a sense of, I love my child. And I want my child to have all the things I didn't have. I couldn't go to Disney. I couldn't go for a weekend away when I was a kid. I couldn't have all the gadgets. I couldn't go to Kenton on Sea and all these fancy places for holidays. Of course, the child must have all of these things that I couldn't have. But that to me is always fascinating. And I see it with some of my middle class friends who are parents in particular. That some of the choices they make, and I'm not saying the choices are bad. I mean, some of these choices may be acceptable, but it's interesting how often parental choices in relation to kids are often me living vicariously through the children.
Absolutely, yes. So we're parenting from our own sense of loss and trying to overwhelm our children with everything that we didn't have. Meanwhile, when we actually strip it all away, wherever we are in the socioeconomic spacing of life, the one thing our child is needing as opposed to wanting is us. They want our time as parents. They want our connection. They want our attention. And that means building relationship, not a toy box full of things. And so
do you think a lot of parents, as a substitute for making time, being present in language and in terms of your time resources, they try to almost like fill the gap by throwing money at the problem, but you can't, right?
Exactly. There is no pound, dollar or rand that can compensate for 10 minutes of mum or dad's time or the consistent caregiver's
time. And it's not a rehearsal, so the time that's lost, you don't know whether you'll have an opportunity to get it back. You'll be lucky if you do.
Well, we can't reconstruct time. We can't claim it back. We can rework how we connect later on. But the earlier we start, the more secure our children will be, the more solid foundation we've created in relationship with our children. The trouble is that we forget that the first language of baby is crying. That when baby is crying, it's a different cry for I'm hungry, I'm lonely, I'm uncomfortable, I've got a pain. Where are you? I'm in this huge cot and I don't know where anybody is. I'm alone. And each of those cries sound completely different, but we have to be with our child to learn those cries. And then over months and time, by mimicking what they hear from mum and dad, they start the language. But when we are just trying to silence a cry, that is when we get into the toddler phase of life and beyond that, we will do anything. So the toddler that cries out for the sweetie in the aisle, and the sweet is put into the hand. The next toy is bought because he's just reached in the direction on the supermarket trolley shelf and so on. So when we just say, yes, darling, anything you want, darling, and essentially that's the behavior that gives that message, we are then putting ourselves on a treadmill for life of forever saying, yes, darling, whatever you want, darling, as opposed to really working out what the child needs.
So two things seem to be going on here. The first is sometimes we may fail to recognize that what the child wants is time, attention, and your presence, because one of the psychosocial needs of children, surprise, surprise, because they are human beings like you as an adult, is that we also get profound enjoyment out of just the making of a relationship, language and time spent together, the tactile nature of a little bit of touch, laughing together, creating memories. So there's a misdiagnosis of what the child's needs might be. But then, of course, more to the point of our framing question is that not only are you not giving the child what the child might actually be craving for when it is crying, you are also beginning to raise a brat.
That's the start of instilling the behavior that results in that ongoing development. And the trouble is that it doesn't just stop when that developmental patterning of behavior doesn't stop when you get to preschool or primary school. It escalates. And so with that process, we find our children in adolescence and the demands get higher and higher. And so hence the clip that I sent to you.
Shall we play it?
I think that would be fabulous.
Let's play it, because then you find yourself suddenly having a teenager that behaves as follows, and you're going to have to pay a lot of money to get Dr. Phil to fix it.
You wrote in to me. Tell me what you wanted me to get straight with your mom.
I want my mom to understand that I can't live off of $1,000 a month, and I grew up on a certain lifestyle. She can't just take that away from me immediately. If someone took her lifestyle away from her, she wouldn't like that. And I grew up on it. It's all I ever know. I can't deal with this.
So you want me to get her to do what? What would be the home run for you?
I need her to understand that I need at least $2,500 a month.
You want a G-Wagon for your 16th birthday?
I need my G-Wagon. There's no question. I need it. She wants to give me a Mercedes C-Class. I will accept that car.
No, I would. With a Honda or a Toyota, and then it barely gets.
I will be happy with that car, because I want my G-Wagon.
I want my G-Wagon!
Really? A C-Class?
So we started with a Honda, a Toyota. I started
with
a Toyota.
Not. I will not be driving anything that can be considered an Uber X, Uber Lux and above.
My car doesn't cost $231,000.
Why not? I mean, why doesn't it?
That just seems like an exorbitant amount to spend on a car. It just seemed foolish to me. I just wouldn't spend it on a car.
Well, I want to. We're talking about me here. Yeah, this is my show.
You need to work out something where she becomes productive and makes a contribution to society instead of taking from society.
I think the best thing would be to start with a job.
No.
Yeah, absolutely. No. She needs a job.
No!
You need a job.
No, I don't want a job.
Well, I know.
There's so much work. I'm tired from work. I don't want to do that.
You know, the first time I heard that before I saw it, I actually thought to myself, surely this is a skid that is just a parody of Dr. Phil. Yeah. Unbelievable.
Absolutely. And, I mean, that is just a snippet of how this that particular show unfolds.
Wow.
But I think the tragedy, I mean, I watched that on YouTube, and the tragedy for me, because it is tragic, the parent has raised the child into this way of expecting, and being now at 15 being able to verbalize her demands.
Want, need.
Yeah.
The word want appears like 10 times. Me, want. And lo and behold, when Dr. Phil wants to open up a conversation around perhaps you need to start being productive and then you can start spending money where you are proud of learning to become a little bit entrepreneurial, saving, and the child starts crying. But who does one blame in this situation? Let's hold that thought because I come back to something that our experts in the Family Matters segment have taught me over the last year or so. I wonder whether a child can simply be brushed off as a brat or whether or not this is a child, A, crying for help, and a child that has a biography that we need to understand. I'm not saying excuse the child's behavior, but where does that child come from? That teenager was not born with a sense of entitlement. It's 11:30.
702 and Cape Talk. Family Matters.
Okay, Nicole, Lee, and Barney, thank you for your patience. We're going to come to you in the next minute. I just want to give you an opportunity, Stephanie, to comment on what I had said there. Now, I'm not trying to, I mustn't even apologize for the shift that I'm undergoing in this slot in relation to parenting. I remember having a massive fight with people who said, no, Eusebius, stop saying that smacking kids is actually acceptable, because the majority of us were raised being smacked by our parents. There's a complicated conversation about values, parental values. It changes from one home to the next. I get all of it. However, I am now at a place that I wasn't at a year ago, which is to say that when a teenager like that gets profiled, it's extremely easy to simply vilify that teenager without having regards for how that teenager came about.
For sure, because we need to look at her, the context in which she has been raised. And in the longer play of that clip, it does evolve that mum is a single mum, and it would appear that she's been a single mum for a long time, although she's very clearly a well-paid professional woman of in some capacity. That aside, you know, there's a particular context in which the child is being raised, and we have no background on that clip as to what's actually been going on. But at the end of the day, the mum, as she spoke further on, talks to her guilt for not being available. And when we parent from our place of our sense of guilt or lack of, and we think that we can do the best we can do by giving things as opposed to ourselves. And so that's the crux of the shift. And so can this child, can this teenager that we've just heard wailing at Dr. Phil, saying she's got to learn how to contribute and take responsibility, can she learn another way of being in the world? Well, she actually does on his show over a period of time.
And we're going to come to that after a couple of calls. I want to ask this question. I want you to hang, and I'm not doing it just to be provocative, but if you are a single parent like the one that has just been described by Stephanie, and maybe you're overcompensating, you're buying stuff, I wonder whether you've thought about this question. When you are buying your teenager, Megan, a really expensive thing that Megan does not need, are you, A, parenting Megan, or are you doing B, self-medicating your own childhood? And there's a difference. Nicole, good morning and welcome to this conversation.
Hi, Eusebius and hi to your guest. I have a 13-year-old daughter. We've always been very middle class. Unfortunately, there haven't been appropriate schools in the area for my daughter to go to, so we've had to put her in a private school. She also, her chosen sport happens to be horse riding, which they call the sport of kings. I can explain to you why, but that would take forever. but she said to me the other day, I mean, I lost my job in January, so the whole dynamic in our family changed totally. We went from being able to afford these kind of things to absolutely not. And she said to me, she's 13, she said to me the other day, Mommy, if you can't afford me, why did you have me?
Wow.
So I can hear even in your tone of voice, Nicole, how painful that was to hear from your child. And that's really hard to take. I think at the end of the day, we teach our children the values at home that are critically important. And to be able to have a sit-down conversation with your daughter about what we can manage, what we can't manage, what we are striving to give you by the private school offering an excellent education, and anything above that is really the icing on the cake. But the fundamentals that you've identified as parents as the key things that you want to offer your daughter, and assure her that she is chosen, that she's loved for who she is, not for what she gets to do.
Yeah.
But the pain in your voice, I really hear. But I think the key thing is to sit down and even say to her, what you just said really hurt me because we have, and then explain to her what you have, what is the price you have been paying. And it's not that you don't want to go to work so that you can support her in her school and all her endeavors, but to explain that there is a cost to it.
How did you respond, Nicole? I'm really sorry for the pain you're going through. How did you respond in the moment?
No, I didn't respond, and that's also not right. I didn't know how to respond, so I thought rather just keep quiet, you know? So, she does understand, because we have had discussions, but, you know, it's very often a case of, well, I didn't choose that school for me. You know, it's not my problem.
Yes.
You know, but unfortunately, we're a family and we do things as a family, you know. And we are all responsible in our own way.
So sometimes we have to cut our cloth.
Not always equipped to understand it. Yeah,
sometimes we have to cut our cloth. And there's a very clear example, explanation here. You lost your job. That's not your fault. And so keeping our children grounded in reality that some things may have to go when the purse strings have had to be pulled in are really difficult but honest conversations. And it's those kind of conversations that enable our children to go forward with being willing to contribute.
I think what's also difficult but instructive about Nicole's experience is that Nicole sounds like a very present and reflective mom, which is the most as children that we can hope for, and a hardworking mom. And at the same time, possibly would need to see more of the behavior, but contrasting with a teenager in the clip from Dr. Phil, this is a teenager who doesn't have an unreasonable expectation. I mean, I take, for example, my hometown of Grahamstown. There are only about a couple of English medium schools there if you want to send your kids to one of those schools. It's children are children. If you go from a school like the one I went to, Graham College, to St. Andrew's College, in the mind of the kid, you are moving up. You're going from Model C school to a posh private school. But if you've been at the private school all along, and there's a certain kind of like social prestige with the other kids in the neighborhood, you go into St. Andrews, and suddenly mom says, actually, from next year, you're going to Graham College. It's also important to acknowledge what teenagers go through and what they will experience. And there, I'd be reluctant to say this is a child that has a sense of entitlement, because the way children are with one another, there is a sense in which everyone will secretly, they may not say it, and children may not have the language, but there will be an extra pair of eyes. Oh, you've come to the peasants, but you were always on the other side of town. Something has happened to your family. So everyone has difficulty in that family structure.
Yeah, absolutely. And what the teenager here is expressing is her sense of loss.
Yes.
Yeah. And it's so as much as it's real for mum,
it's also real for the teenager. Yeah, sure. Lee, thank you so much for holding on. Welcome to our conversation.
Morning. This comes from an article from a newspaper, and the heading was, "Where Have All the Children Gone?" And I truly believe that children are pressurized into adulthood, and the parents expect them to have the same values and the same high marks and be the best sportsman. And I kind of feel, and everything that goes with it, to excel in everything. I see children around me, not so much anymore, dropping from fatigue. And when I walk into their house, they say, what did you bring me? And I say, me. It's so sad that children are pressurized to their parents' expectations.
Mm. Lee, that's slightly off topic. So what Lee's talking about in part is the phenomenon that we've explored in the show before of helicopter parenting. Mm. But I want to nevertheless tie what Lee is saying in with today's topic, which is that presumably one of the ways to lay a foundation and help me out here, Steph, is that if a scenario were to come where suddenly you can't afford to give your child what you'd always given them, if you have been very deliberate about dialogue, about the values that you are inculcating, that will not make some of the pain and social awkwardness go away when difficulty hits the family, but it will be a softer landing.
Absolutely, because then we have a solid foundation of relationship. And so it's not about the things. It is about the relationship. And so when we have that as our fundamental value in the family unit, then that's, if that was lost through death or illness, or then that is such a tragic loss.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So we need to navigate. And this is the challenge in our 21st century instant gratification driven world, that because we can get it at the push of a button, we don't see why we shouldn't get it at the push of a button. But have we budgeted for it?
Yeah.
Have we planned for it? 100%. Have we even anticipated it? No. Ooh, I like that. Ping, press the button, boom, it's in the box by Take a Lot or whoever the next day. And so we're into this instant gratification. And so it's how do we bring ourselves back to some real core fundamental values? Because that's what 100%. Each child and each family unit is crying out for.
Okay, so in our time that's left, we're going to try and help you out with some practicalities. Let's say you have a teenager like the one in the clip that you've heard, or like unfortunate mom that called in a few minutes ago, and your child at 13 says to you, well, if you can't afford to send me to being on a horse and doing all these fancy sports, why did you even have me in the first place? Is it too late? No, it's not too late, because while you cannot change the past, you can begin to take decisions right now to reparent and rehabituate the way you do business at home. And we're going to give you some practical tips with the help of Stephanie in terms of things that you might yet do to begin to reverse the behavior of the deep sense of entitlement in the children in your lives. If you've tried out some tips, let's make the circle bigger for other people. Tell us what has worked, what hasn't worked. How have you begun to instill a sense of independence, a sense of humility, and a sense that the universe sometimes throws all sorts of things at families that can change what the family can afford, for example, and how the family is arranged, and what has worked, what hasn't worked. 011-883-0702. Call us in Joburg, and in Cape Town on 021-446-0567.
702 and Cape Talk. Family Matters.
Family Matters, we're talking about raising a brat, and we say that slightly tongue-in-cheek because children are a product of their circumstances. But if you have had trouble instilling in your child a healthy sense of what is affordable, what is not affordable, the way the world works, it's never too late. And the question is, what can you start doing differently today? JR, I'm going to come to your call in a second. Let's get a couple of examples so far. So there are lots of problems with boarding schools. I was lucky that I only spent 1 year in boarding school, and that was in my trick when I had all the privileges. But there are certain things that you get in boarding schools that are quite useful in terms of instilling a sense of independence and just reining in any sense of entitlement. Mm-hmm. If the alarm goes off at 6:30 in the morning or whatever time, it will go off a second time. I think it went off twice at my school at Grant House at 6:40, and that's it. Mm-hmm. So the expectation is that you had better make up your own bed. You take your laundry every week and you go and fetch it. You got to make sure everything is ticked off in terms of what it is that you're handing in and taking out. And you better respond to that alarm. And if you don't, you're going to be in trouble. Now, there are bad versions of the way in which life is regimented. But the point is that even at home, you can begin to make sure that your children take responsibility.
Exactly. So the very early steps of learning to take responsibility can start even as early as toddlers. But as parents, we need to be modeling what we're expecting the child to do.
Okay.
So if we're going to tidy up the Duplo, the big Lego, then mum or dad or both need to get down on the floor with the toddler and say, let's tidy up the Duplo together.
So don't just bark instructions.
Exactly. Because what does tidy up the Duplo mean unless we're modeling it? And so that's true of everything that we want our children to do in terms of learning how to take responsibility. And so at age-appropriate levels, we give them new little tasks to do that contribute to the well-being of the family. Laying the table, clearing the table, emptying the dishwasher, feeding the dog. And so it goes on incrementally.
Even if you can afford to, is it also useful to sometimes withhold saying yes to every request? So, for example, if you go shopping and child says, Mom, I want a bar one. Okay, you get a bar one. But the next time you go out and the same behavior happens, you deliberately say, no, not this time.
Absolutely. So to be clear about why in the first session it's yes, although in my household it would have been no, we would have had to look for something a little bit more healthy than a sugar-coated, chocolate-covered bar one. But so it's about also remembering the responsible thing is to ensure that your children have eaten before they go out. And then you can avoid all of those requests. So if you're on a financial restriction budget, then think about, if we're going out and my children are going to get hungry, what can I take from home? What can I give them before we leave? And what can I take with me that will avert all those mummy, mummy, mummy?
JR, good morning. Welcome to the show. Hi there, JR. Are you there?
Hello. Oh, yes, I'm there. Mine is slightly different. Good day. Good day to both of you. I've got a 30-year-old daughter, and she's not staying with me now. She's working. She's staying with her mom, and I'm married with two kids, so she's the third, basically. And the family is a very united family. I tried by all means to make sure that I take care of all my children, make sure that they go to school, as a dad would do. But now I have a problem at her 30s. She's now saying, I do not like her because whenever she wants money from me, I tell her about her siblings. You say, I don't have money because I still have to pay school fees for your little sister and I still have to pay this for your little brother. And she says, I like those more than I like her. And she has actually shut me out of her life. I mean, it's 6 months now. The last time I spoke to her was in December last year. And she's got a daughter, so she's also depriving me of having a good time with my granddaughter simply because I cannot give her money, nothing else. You know, all the boxes are ticked except whenever she wants money, and unfortunately I don't have it, I say no, then I have a problem. I'm not a good dad. I don't like her. I like the younger sister and the younger brother more than I like her. And I must be honest with you, that's a big problem for me, and I don't know how to go around this problem.
So, JR, I mean, there's a couple of things that come to mind straight away. First of all, your daughter is 30. She is a grown adult. She, you know, so from the age of 18, our children are able to vote and do a whole lot of independent things, including work from the age of 16 legally. So I'm curious as to, you know, why she isn't taking responsibility for her own independent income, which she is clearly able, and in terms of her age, to be acquiring in some shape or form. The other thing is that there may be some jealousy and hurt because you have moved on with life. You have got a, from what I understand, a new wife and more children, and she's feeling like somebody, her place in the family is usurped potentially. So perhaps what you could do is first of all have some one-on-one time with your 30-year-old daughter and talk about the pain that she may or may not be feeling, given that you've moved on with your life and you have a new family now. And once you're able to acknowledge her feelings and have that conversation, then you, I would suggest you come around to the fact that she is 30 and that she needs to be responsible for her own life. And how the foundation that you and her mum gave her needs to have been enough for her to now go forward.
Is that a conversation you have tried to open up before, JR?
I have. It's not the first time that we have a situation like this. I have, in fact, that's the reason why now it's about 6 months that we haven't been talking, is because somehow I felt, you know what, maybe that's what she wants. Let me give her space, because it looks like all the time I'll call her and say, look, I have a problem. This is a situation. Why do you have a problem with me that I don't love you when I do not give you money? Complain about something else. Do you have a problem with me about something else? Let's just take money out of the situation, out of the equation. What problem do you have with me? None. You know, and the problem is, it's not necessarily a new relationship that I have now. Mm. She grew up in this relationship. I mean, when I had my son, she was there. When I had my daughter, she was there. So as much as I'm not married to her mother, but she's very close to this family. She's part of this family.
So how do you feel about her attitude and not speaking to each other for 6 months? Do you take it as an indictment on your parenting choices earlier in your life in terms of how you had raised her? Or are you clear that perhaps she's being inappropriate and manipulative? What has this done to your own sense of self as dad?
For me, she's just been manipulative. She's just trying to make sure that I see myself as a dad that failed his daughter, and I need to, you know, more like patch up for that. Mm-hmm. And that's what conversation that I had with her, to say, look, the way you're doing things is like I have been absent in your life. It's like I didn't even pay for your school fees. I didn't even take you through school. Maybe I would understand if that was the situation. It's a whole different situation, because your grade one uniform, I bought it. Your school fees, I paid it. I've done everything that a dad could have done. Even though at some point we were staying apart, she was staying with her mom and I was with my family, but she was always welcome to come through.
Sure. What's JR to do?
JR, sometimes it's helpful to have a facilitated conversation.
I'd also love to hear what the 30-year-old has to say.
Yeah.
I mean, I want to believe JR. He just sounds so sincere. But I would love to be a fly in the wall. It would be unethical to hear how a facilitated conversation by someone like Stephanie would play out between JR and his daughter.
But it's about being able to let each person be seen and heard and understood, and then to find and to navigate a shared compromised pathway forward.
So this is not all lost necessarily, is it?
Not necessarily, but it does take two willing parties. But it's certainly something JR could suggest. You know, whether it's with a professional like myself or through a counseling organization, there are many potential supportive processes that they could go with.
Absolutely. What a fascinating conversation. Stephanie, as always, thank you for your incredible thoughtfulness and for helping people puzzle through this. It's amazing. We can be so profoundly loving towards one another as human beings, and we can also be, just in a split second, be sources of enormous hurt and injury at the same time.
Yeah, yeah. The toughest thing in life is parenting. Thanks.